you know, it's like I would see a mention of something, like, oh, like, for example, from the fourth episode of the podcast, I saw a mention somewhere that, you know, Henry VIII wrestled King Francis I. And I was like, what? So, you know, so I would run these stories down and, like, through a variety of sources and different types of material could kind of come up with, like, a comprehensive story. And so that's what I've been trying to do with a lot of these things with fighting sports is whether it's going through, you know, newspaper accounts or other types of sources is try to create a cohesive narrative kind of focusing on one very specific thing. So it's been a lot of fun.
You're listening to the Addicted to Fitness podcast, brought to you by Elemental Training Tampa. Now, here's your hosts, Nick and Shannon Birch.
Thank you for stopping by and checking out this week's Addicted to Fitness podcast. We really appreciate you guys listening, and we also appreciate you guys sharing the podcast. And we know you guys are doing it because we see the downloads go up each week. And if you haven't done so already, please, please give us that rating and review in iTunes. And there's also someone else that can give us a rating and review.
Facebook. That's head right. Over to our Facebook page. It's Addicted to Fitness Podcast.
That's right. Make sure you throw the podcast on the air.
Yes.
Because there, at the end, because there are some addicted fitnesses out there, but not our podcast.
That so, is not us.
Yes, throw the podcast there on the end. So this week we got an interview episode for you guys, and it's actually our first repeat guest on the podcast.
Yes, because she's so awesome. That's why we're bringing her back.
Yeah, you guys will hear in a few moments that, you know, today's guest, L.A. Jennings, Dr. L.A. Jennings, as I should humbly, you know, that's her title. She is a doctor.
So official.
Uh-huh. Her and I and are really long-time friends, and we can get off on tangents talking about a variety of topics. So before we get into it, we kind of want to introduce how I know L.A.
Yep.
She was actually, her and her husband, Mike Jennings, are the owners of a gym out in Denver called Train Fight Win, and I was actually their first client when they started the gym out there.
How many years ago?
Gosh.
I mean, this is like going back. I want to say it was like...
It's almost 10 years ago now.
Wow.
Well, actually, probably maybe more like 9, because I think they probably started in 2009 there, 2010.
Yeah.
Because I moved out there in beginning of 2009.
So yeah, they kind of like their gym is one of those kind of unique gyms where I feel like it's almost like family more than a gym.
Oh, absolutely.
And they basically adopted you first.
Yeah.
You were their first adoptee.
Well, you know, I mean, it's like they had very humble beginnings.
Yeah.
You know, I can attest to, I was at the very first class, and it was there was no bells and whistles or any glamorous equipment or, you know, like stuff you would see at like some of those posh boutique gyms. Mm-hmm. There was none of that. It was very bare bones, very Spartan-esque, which I liked. And I liked enough to keep coming back. So, and while the time I spent out in Denver, I developed a relationship with both Mike and L.A. that is really kind of stand the test in time. And you came out there when we went out there a few years ago and saw the gym and saw the evolution. And it's amazing to watch those guys, how they've progressed over the years. But I don't want to get too much into it because we touch on a bunch of these topics in the interview. So we're going to jump into this week's interview with, once again, she's back, Dr. L.A. Jennings. I'm excited to welcome back our first repeat guest on the Addicted to Fitness podcast. She's a published author. She has her PhD in literary studies. She's also a badass MMA coach and gym owner. Welcome back, L.A. Jennings, to the Addicted to Fitness podcast. How you doing today, L.A.?
I'm great. How are you, Nick?
I'm doing great, and I'm so excited to talk to you, not only because you're our first repeat guest, but we don't get to talk nearly enough as I would like. So
true.
It's good that we can kind of schedule a conversation, which is both beneficials in both ways for us. So, so obviously, I mentioned in the intro that LA is the owner of Train Fight Win, which is an MMA gym in Denver, Colorado. That's how I met her. And I would love to hear how your gym is progressing since I was the very first client you guys had when you moved to Denver.
truly, truly our very first client when there was literally just you, Mike, and I at so many of our workouts, which, you know, was never a bad thing, but it's when, you know, when you're a business owner, it's so hard those days when you're kind of peeking out the window, hoping to see people show up. And, you know, we were telling another friend of ours who's starting his own personal training business here in Denver that there are so many days that it was just the two of us and no one would show up, and we would just work out and hope that the next day we'd get, you know, more buy-in. And so we were so lucky that our first client in Denver was you, who also has remained one of our best friends since. So it's been great to maintain that relationship. But yeah, that was actually a little over 8 years ago that we relocated from Tallahassee to Denver. And when you're in the fight community, so much of your draw as a gym comes from your reputation. And while we, you know, had a lot of experience competing in Florida and in Georgia and knew a great deal of people, and so we were able to have a gym down there, and we moved to Denver, we literally didn't know anyone. So we built Train Fight Win in Denver literally from the ground up with just Mike and I knowing that we had good material, that we loved coaching, that we loved teaching people the martial arts styles that we grew up with, and just kind of hoping eventually to get some folks in. And our initial goal was never really to have a tremendous fight team. Although, you know, that was how we really started Train Fight Win, was doing the conditioning workouts that helped us while we were competing. We never thought that we would really become a fight gym. And so as we grew our business here in Denver, we would continue offering our conditioning classes, which remain our most popular classes, and then adding in our striking and our grappling. And over the past few years, we've had so many people become interested in competing, which was cool, because that's really, I mean, we started Train Fight Win with the idea that it was like, we always say our subtitle is training with a purpose, so that people would have some sort of goal, but just not at this level in terms of our competition team. So over the past few years, we've started to grow a very strong MMA, striking, and grappling team. And a lot of that, I think, has been due... First, like, you have to have those first few people compete and succeed. Once you have that, you're able to, you know, start getting a little bit of a reputation. And, you know, we had some good guys fight. Our buddy Joey, who was our first MMA fighter almost, I think, 6 or 7 years ago. And then our friend Andrew Caters, who also did 3 MMA fights underneath us. And he was, you know, a good fighter. And a really great coach. And then we started kind of growing a few, and we really would only concentrate on one fighter at a time. And so our next fighter that we started working on is David Gonzalez, who's been training with us since he was 17. So we put him in his first MMA fight, I guess it was about 3 or 4 years ago. And he won, and then he kept winning his fights. You know, you win some, you lose some. You always, you know, have that part of the game as well. It's never guaranteed. But the promotion that we were working with here in Denver was this really great MMA promotion, half amateur, half pro. And a few years ago, I guess it was last year, the gentleman who ran it, Seth Daniels, he ended up ending his MMA promotion to concentrate on Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu showcases, which he does now, and they're absolutely amazing. But we were, you know, pretty sad to see the one MMA venue we had worked with close. So we started working with a new promotion called Sparta Combat League, and new to us, I should say, not new to Denver. And what was cool about them is that even though we didn't have much of a reputation, and there were so many other big gyms in town who were constantly wanting to get their fighters on cards, Sparta got us on very quickly, got a couple of our guys on, David and Kyle and Tim, all onto cards. And then because we had more visibility in the community, we started getting more people coming to the gym wanting to train with us for their own fight. So we grew our fight team that way. So a lot of it, I think, our kind of moving from being more of a you know, kind of fitness or technique focused gym to now becoming a you know, a relatively strong, if small, fight gym that's competitive in this city with a lot of very big, you know, professional based gyms.
Right.
That we got the exposure for the first time. We had the ability to put our guys into shows. and that's been really exciting because I think that's a big part of trying to break into a new community is that we were actually given a chance to showcase our fighters, and people keep saying, like, you guys have come out of nowhere. Well, we haven't really come out of nowhere, but yes, we have suddenly given an opportunity to let these guys fight, and that's why it's like feels like it's grown so much just in the past 6 months.
Right. Now, you said you had some people that actually came into your gym that had previous fight experience.
Yeah, we've had a couple of guys. Mainly it's been we have a pretty strong striking program. And we've gotten recently a number of kids who were wrestlers, competitive wrestlers in college, and who have done some, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and other kind of training, but that wanted to get onto an MMA trajectory and wanted stand-up. And our stand-up program's different than a lot of MMA gyms because we don't just do Muay Thai to prepare for MMA fights. And in fact, that's not even my background. Mike and I both come from a pretty diverse striking background of Chinese martial arts, Filipino martial arts, some traditional American boxing, and then some, like, you know, traditional K-1 style kickboxing. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a Muay Thai base. We have a very different looking, I think, striking base. Like our style, because it's the Chinese kickboxing, is much more grounded and kind of heavier,
mm-hmm,
than the kind of elevated stance of the Muay Thai,
yeah,
style, which I love Muay Thai. It's just that's not my background, so I don't, you know, try to say like, oh, I'm a Muay Thai instructor. We always say we do striking. Interestingly, though, our folks, when they do the Muay Thai events, we had a group do the giant Muay Thai tournament here in April, and we ended up winning so many fights at that event. We won the team championship, which was very unexpected when we had 6 fighters compete instead of, you know, 20 like some of the other schools did. So,
nice.
Yeah.
That's wow. It sounds very similar because obviously I know I trained with you all, but I brought my you know, my previous training there, and like the way you describe it, it's very similar. We don't have we didn't have like the traditional upright stance, and
mm-hmm,
I mean, I know you guys teach the plumb and with the clinch for all those people who are, I don't want to go too inside, but teach the clinch, but it, you know, a lot more hand combinations, some great kicks, but also like you said, a little bit almost more heavy handed from my opinion. I don't know if you would be the same for what you would say, but
yeah. Yeah, what I tell people too is like our stances are so different because my background was in the Sanda and Chinese kickboxing.
Mm-hmm.
In Chinese kickboxing, you can do takedowns.
Yeah.
Like you can do shots, right? And so the stance had to be heavier because if you're up on your toes like a traditional Muay Thai stance, it's a lot easier to get taken down. And so that's why I think Sancho,
yep,
Sancho, the Chinese kickboxing, mm-hmm, is such a great companion to MMA fighting because it's already preparing you for takedown defense.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Now you got the competitive fight team, and but I know that's not all the things you guys do at the gym, specifically you. I know you, and for all those people who are unaware, who haven't heard the last interview with LA, her and her husband are the co-owners of Train Fight Win, and run, I guess you're both the league co-coaches also, so you're both the head coaches for the fight team. But LA herself was a published author, or not was, is a published author, and she wrote essentially kind of the book, really, on female combat sports. She's a knockout. I forgot the subtitle, LA.
I always forget if it's A or the, it's a history of women in fighting sports.
Gotcha. Yes, of course. And you guys know we'll always link that on our show notes and everything. But that's essentially the, like I said, the encyclopedia for the, or the historical count of, you know, women in combat sports. So I highly encourage everybody to check that out. But since we talked last, there's been obviously, and just since it's not new, you know, obviously we learned that from your book, but there's been a massive, I think, evolution in women combat sports. You know, I mean, one person, there was kind of the figurehead, even though I know not to you because you're very in the game, but the figurehead was Ronda Rousey, I would think, to the general public. But now it is certainly changed, and there's a lot more figures and a lot more exposure, I think, to, you know, specifically probably women's MMA because it's probably in the forefront of the public eye. But there's a lot more, I think, attention being paid to women's combat sports.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's sort of interesting how when when a sport has a particular person that is, you know, most frequently in the media, that that person can come to represent the entire sport. I mean, I think we're seeing that with Conor McGregor right now. Is,
right.
You know, he, I mean, obviously he's been a very famous fighter in the UFC for a long time, but I think he is, to the uninitiated, they sort of see him as the UFC fighter.
Yes.
And of course, you know, again, the same thing, like you mentioned, happened with Ronda. She was the face of women's MMA, and, you know, for better or for worse, I think, you know, ultimately to me, it was not a bad thing for her to bring so much attention to the sport because it ends up benefiting other fighters. But yeah, there have been a lot more opportunities for women recently. You've seen several fights where women were headlining UFC cards. And so I've been working with an organization here in Colorado because of the Olympic Training Center that is advocating to help get women's wrestling, or actually girls' wrestling, into high schools and middle schools and even colleges across the country. And it's been really cool too, seeing as they kind of build their organization, a lot more interest being paid to women's wrestling as well.
Yeah, because it's an Olympic sport right now, correct, women's wrestling?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right, but it's not yet transitioned into the college or the high school level.
Right, exactly. So I'm not sure if this is still the correct number, but when I spoke to them a few months ago, the number was still that 44 states in the country do not have sanctioned girls wrestling in middle school and high school, which is pretty amazing. I mean, that's, you know, 2017, and we're still talking, you know, the vast majority of the country does not allow for girls to compete in wrestling in high school. So it's pretty astonishing.
Yeah, that is like, I agree. I can't think of a better word besides astonishing. And it's sad to think about the sport of wrestling too, kind of, it's almost getting, I wouldn't say passed by, because luckily, not luckily, but I think fortunately, MMA is really showcasing wrestling, even though it's not the same interpretation of it. But I mean, we just had it, I think the last Olympics that came, you know, wrestling had to be essentially a public outcry for it to get it back on as an Olympic sport.
Yeah, and some of the biggest advocates for it were MMA fighters, which was really cool seeing those guys lend, you know, their support and their voice and their, you know, power as celebrity athletes to getting wrestling back on the Olympic card. You know, it's so crazy because when you look at the history of the Olympics in terms of the ancient Olympics, I mean, it was one of the first sports. It was, you know, running, chariot racing, wrestling.
Right.
Like, that's the, so it was pretty amazing that they got rid of it. But yeah, I mean, you had, you know, Matt Hughes and Randy Couture and, you know, a lot of these other, you know, big name athletes, you know, jumping to their defense. And so, I mean, I think that was only a few months in which they declared it off of the Olympic register that they brought it back on.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great to see that. I mean, I wasn't, I was confident that it would get back on, but it was probably because of my some sort of bias that I have that I'm so because I love it so much that I was confident. But I mean, I didn't know how close it was. But I don't think people realize in the United States that United States is pretty badass at wrestling when it comes to folk style and freestyle and Greco-Roman. We have a pretty badass the program here in the United States.
Yeah, we definitely do. And you know what's interesting to me, and I think a lot of it is also like where you grew up, because where I grew up, in Tallahassee in Florida, I don't think any high school had wrestling. And I know Florida State didn't have a wrestling team.
Right.
And in fact, when I talked to my contact at Wrestle Like a Girl, which is the foundation trying to get wrestling into the middle schools and high schools, they were saying that Florida, there's only one community college that has a wrestling team. That's it. Whereas if you look at like the state of California, Colorado, the Midwest, you see a much, much, much larger, interest on the middle school, high school, collegiate level in wrestling. So it seems to be pretty regional.
Yeah, I agree.
Which may account for the fact that a lot of people are not terribly familiar with wrestling.
Right. Now, there's one thing I want to touch on before I forget is that you obviously were talking about how wrestling, one of the original sports in the ancient Olympic Games. And the reason I know that, I mean, I knew it before, but I also just heard about it on your podcast, the Warm Up Podcast.
Yeah. I've been trying to kind of think of, I was writing for Vice for a little while and kind of providing them with some articles on the history of fighting sports. And while it was, it was really cool, the Associated website has kind of fallen out. A lot of the writers, myself, Jack Slack, a couple other people have kind of moved on to other projects. And so I knew I wanted to get involved in sharing that information because I really enjoy it. But I wasn't sure I wanted to get involved with writing for another website again. I also knew I did not feel like devoting a lot of my time as an academic in writing journal articles, academic journal articles that literally no one will read. So so my thought was instead, and especially actually inspired by you, Nick, I should totally start a podcast because I love listening to podcasts. I can do these little blurbs, and I'm also terribly lucky that the university where I work has a recording studio, and I have an intern who helps me, is teaching me how to do mixing and stuff.
That sounds so awesome.
Yeah. So I started the podcast, and it's fun. I mean, I'm, kind of only doing one episode every few weeks, but a lot of this information is things that I tracked down. It's like I would see a mention of something, like, for example, from the fourth episode of the podcast, I saw a mention somewhere that, Henry VIII wrestled King Francis I. And I was like, what? So, so I would run these stories down and like through a variety of sources and different types of material could kind of come up with like a comprehensive story. And so that's what I've been trying to do with a lot of these things with fighting sports is whether it's going through, newspaper accounts or other types of sources is try to create a cohesive narrative kind of focusing on one very specific thing. So it's been a lot of fun so far. I'm enjoying just the process of trying to get the information out there in a different way.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm only through one episode so far, but I'm going to keep on listening. And because after the first episode, it was just it was a great kind of narrative historical account of kind of where combat sports came from. And obviously the quotes you had and everything in there from Odyssey?
Homer.
From Homer, correct? Right.
Yeah.
And those were, I mean, people are familiar with that, but they're not familiar about all the intricate details and how combat sports played a major part in things like the ancient Olympic Games.
Yeah. And I mean, to me, it's so fascinating because I think, when I was writing my book and when I've kind of played with, eventually I intend to do a book on just general MMA history. And most of the time when people talk about it, they kind of only relate it back to the ancient Greeks. And, you know, what I found, and while I did start my first podcast episode about the ancient Greeks, because those guys love to write about themselves, you know, it's actually been really cool to me seeing how almost every single culture had some sort of, you know, mixed combat sport.
Right. Yeah, it's, I mean, I think it's kind of what's given rise, I think, to, I mean, obviously the UFC as an organization has done a great job publicizing their sport, but it's the fact that it's something so ancient and primal. I don't know if those are the right words to describe it, but it kind of taps into everybody's real kind of primal nature about hand-to-hand combat. Both, and you can see it in men and women. So it's something that I think is universal. And
totally.
That's why I really think I'm glad people like you are out there who are researching and talking about it, because now there's events like Mayweather versus McGregor. That is a kind of I wouldn't say it's a proper or a great example of a combat sports event, but
I kind of loved it. Like, I loved every minute of it, I'll have to admit. And I totally ended up sticking up for the fight so many times with people, because I got a lot of people's irritation with it. But at the same time, I don't know, it's probably also just kind of part of my personality that I think it's fun to see weird things like that. But yeah, I thought it was really cool. First of all, you know, yes, they made a ton of money, but McGregor really did something very different. He showed how other UFC fighters can kind of work within their contracts, which are actually exceedingly limited. Mm-hmm. You know, he made a great deal of money on that fight, but it wasn't that different for Mayweather. I mean, essentially, Mayweather's always made a ton of money on his fights, but the UFC fighters just don't get paid in the same way as boxers,
right?
Because of their contracts. So, you know, I thought that was pretty cool. I loved a lot of the elements of it. I enjoyed parts of the smack talking that went on. And, you know, I think a lot of people may or may not be aware of this, but, you know, Muhammad Ali did an MMA fight in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, so it's not like McGregor was the first, but it's a pretty big risk for him to a certain extent to do something like that. I mean, yeah, he's always going to be able to go back to the UFC, right? But, I mean, he still, I think, did something that not a lot of his peers would have even contemplated until now.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely a pioneer, and I think he's done, and you were kind of just, you were alluding to it, I think, in a certain sense, that he's kind of really done a lot for the fighters in the UFC, because now he's kind of, I mean, I don't know how many guys are going to cross, I doubt anybody's really going to cross over. I kind of think this was, they kind of caught lightning in a bottle in that situation. But I think now fighters are like, they are, maybe they have a little bit more confidence to stand up for themselves and say, hey, we're the reason why this is so popular, this sport is so popular, not because you're the organization, not because of the people running the organization, it's because of the fighters. The fighters are the product, not the vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a really interesting interview with Dominic Cruz the day before the fight, and that was one of the one of his points too, was that it was actually really exciting to him and to a lot of other UFC fighters to see what would happen. And, you know, it's like, it really didn't matter win or lose for Conor. I mean, I really don't think it mattered for him at all.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he essentially could have put the UFC, if they had tried to fight this fight as they had, you know, said they were going to do initially, he could have put them into some trouble. I mean, you don't want to alienate your fighters, and you know, for a lot of them, this could actually be a pretty cool way to improve their own you know, skills in various venues. And so, yeah, I mean, my hope, and one of the interesting things that came out of it, I know from Randy Couture and a couple of the other kind of old UFC guys were actually meeting with legislators in Nevada sometime in the coming months to talk about the types of contracts that the UFC uses on their fighters and the need either for, you know, a review of those contracts to see if they're, you know, I don't even, forgive me, I have no idea what like the political or technical term would be for when you're taking advantage of your workers or right. something, or if the, I'm not sure what the term is, or if the contract would be considered, I don't know, somehow in violation of whatever act.
Right, not ethical or anything like that.
You see
like
where
that.
My knowledge base is, right? or that they would, or that the fighters need to unionize, mm-hmm. which could also be, you know, useful for them.
Right. No, I'm excited to see that because I think it's an eventual step where in order to be more of a mainstream, even though it's very mainstream, you know, to get to that level of something like NFL or MLB, which I don't know if they're shooting for that, but I think you need to have that association because especially in our sport, in MMA. You know, there's some dire consequences. I mean, we're unfortunately,
absolutely.
You know, we're seeing a lot, especially now with, especially boxers from, you know, from the early, you know, probably in the 60s and 70s, a lot of people are CTE is becoming a huge issue now, both in football, but also it's going to be a big issue in combat sports. So, I mean, having an organization or some type of fighters union that protects them later on in life when they need the protection the most, That's super important right now. So I'm hopefully it's an inevitable step that they're going to be able to take.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I wanted to kind of on the other end of the spectrum, and of course, if you listen to Oscar De La Hoya, you would think that the Mayweather-McGregor was the biggest tragedy or, you know, atrocity in combat sports. But I think he's a little bit overdramatic.
Yeah.
I think it actually did a lot to try to bring people to his event, which happened a few weeks ago, the Gennady Golovkin versus Canelo Alvarez, which was probably one of the biggest boxing events, I mean, especially as matchup-wise, probably in the last 10 years that I can remember.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, you know, the Mayweather-McGregor fight may have been, you know, a spectacle more than like a true demonstration of the sweet science. But I think that it brought, you know, a lot of people said, well, now I want to see what a real
yeah.
a boxing match between two real boxers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, one can never forget that McGregor is not a boxer.
Right,
he's
yeah.
an MMA fighter, and so his style and his skill and even his cardio, his pacing
yep.
is suited for that type of event. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, I think this probably was one of the biggest matchups, and it was very interesting.
Yeah, and I need to rewatch it. I've kind of haven't done my due diligence to rewatch it. I've heard live broadcasts. I've heard people like broadcast about it and comment live commentary on it. And from my impressions that I got from a lot of people, that it was a good fight, an awesome fight, kind of lived up to the expectations, but that it seemed to be a pretty convincing decision for Triple G.
Right.
Yet when it went to the scorecards, it ended up being a draw. And, I mean, obviously that would kind of rub people the wrong way. And specifically, I think there was had one judge that actually scored the fight an outright draw. And then
right.
another judge scored it 118 to 110 for Canelo, which left a lot of people scratching their heads. I wonder what your impressions, if you got to see it or if you got to, you know, what your impressions of it were.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, after these big fights happen, I very rarely watch anything live anymore. I didn't watch Mayweather-McGregor live either. Mike and I took advantage of the many people who flocked to sports bars and instead went to a really nice cocktail bar and
there
had drinks
go.
Because, you know, we watch fighting every day, so we're
yeah. yeah.
not to say we're bored of it, but, you know, it's like we would rather watch it the next day. So
right.
I did the same thing with the Canelo Triple G fight. So, yeah, I mean, I've watched like highlights from it. What I think is really interesting is that, you know, boxing is always under suspicion of corruption. And the reason and whether the judges were corrupt or whether they were inept, I think we'll never really know. I mean, maybe we could know. But the problem is that any time there is a decision that is made, whether it's maybe calling a TKO or, you know, calling a fight before it was maybe truly over, calling a draw, calling a fight for one fighter rather than the other, is that because boxing has this pretty sordid history that is very well known, any decision that's made now, you know, is suspect. So I don't know if, you know, boxing officials are still as crooked as they were, you know, even, gosh, I mean, that's the problem, is that there's literally evidence of people of corruption in boxing from, you know, just a few years ago. I mean, mm-hmm. So the problem is that boxing has a real reputation issue. So whether or not there is corruption, there's always going to be that suspicion there.
Now, did you, I mean, obviously when you did all the research you had for your book, you focused on combat sports, which includes boxing. Did you see, I mean, obviously you kind of just alluded to it, but is there documented historical evidence that has a lot of corruption incidents happen in boxing?
Yeah, absolutely. And the interesting thing is that, I mean, so you have to figure in the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, there's definitely corruption, right? Yeah. I mean, you didn't even have judging. You didn't have judges. You had referees. Fights literally went to basically a knockout or a draw because one person was passed out. So fighting back then was almost in a way kind of before the Queensberry rules or even before the institutionalization of boxing when it had a strong governing body in the 20th century. Boxing was almost kind of easier back then because it was pretty obvious, right, if somebody won or lost. Now, people could still take dives. There was a lot of, fighter corruption, right, where fighters would do things to manipulate their opponent, manipulate their hands, whatever, to increase the likelihood that they would win a fight. But that was from the corners, basically. When a sport, and I have found this in multiple sports, but when something goes, and this was sort of a 19th century phenomenon when things became organized, right? So instead of having just, you know, fights everywhere, you had the birth of, right, like a boxing governing body.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, you know, judges and referees, and they're supposed to be, you know, operating objectively. And that's when you really start to have corruption happening from that outside sphere, right? People who are still, they're not the fighters, they're not the coaches, but they're supposed to be part of that fighting process. And their reasons for, you know, buying into some sort of or opting to, you know, favor one fighter or another, or make a decision this way or the other, obviously they're much even more easily corruptible than the fighters are. So there's definitely evidence of boxing corruption. I mean, you had instances in, you know, the 80s. I think there was even an instance about 10 years ago where a fighter had put like a powdered plastic in with his wraps.
Margarito, I believe it was.
Yeah, that's who it was. Yep. Yeah. So as he was punching and his hands got sweaty, it basically turned it into plaster.
Yeah, against Miguel Cotto, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, that's the thing, is you had those kind of decisions, and then you also had things like judges or refs that would stop a fight even though maybe they shouldn't have stopped it in order to favor one fighter over the other.
Right.
I mean, but I've even seen that. I don't know. I mean, that's so hard. Like, is that corruption? Is that bias?
Yeah. I think too, especially with the referees, I mean, you get I think it's almost you're taught to be, you know, have the fighter's welfare in mind first and foremost. And just human nature, if you see somebody taking a lot of punishment, you don't have, I mean, that's why you have experienced refs to see, you know, hey, can this guy take this much longer, or is this something that could be, you know, and, you know, create irreversible damage? So with the judges, I mean, I get it. I get early stoppages just because they think, hey, I don't think you can continue, and maybe they just don't know the boxer well enough or the fighter well enough. But then when you start getting into judges, I always am curious why they don't use older fighters. You know, somebody who's had experience in the ring that can see when a shot lands and when it's deflected and when somebody's creating or really owning the gym, owning the ring and having that kind of that ring generalship in there and driving the action, I don't know how someone who's never been in the ring and just watched it from an outside perspective can know that.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, that's sort of an interesting thing, too, because sometimes I'm not sure if fighters are necessarily the best judge of that.
Right. That's probably, yeah, they're probably more biased in a certain extent.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't really know what the best answer is. I do know that, like, for me, I usually, when a decision goes a way that you're not expecting it to, and it seems one person's a clear winner, and then the, you know, judges end up scoring it a different way, I think that, you know, it's frustrating, but it's always important to keep in mind that they are seeing the fight from a different angle from the rest of us. So, you know, I've had this experience too, when we're coaching, we're sitting right next to the judges. So we're looking literally at the fighter's feet. And it just seems like the angle is a little bit different than when you're looking at it from, you know, overhead, or even when you're like at the cameras at the angle of like their, you know, their torsos.
Right.
So I always wonder about that too, if like that affects, you know, the way in which the judging happens. I don't know. It's like I try to, it's really hard, first of all, to like combat a decision.
Yep.
Once it's made. I mean, we actually had an instance when we thought we were going to have to do that because one of our fighters got knocked out from a blow that was actually technically illegal,
right,
for amateur fighters. And so it should have been a DQ for the other guy, because we were, you know, a little upset that our guy got hit with something that was clearly illegal. But the process for trying to get that decision reversed, even for something that was pretty obvious, is just insanely daunting. And that's on the level, right, of like a, you know, amateur fight in Colorado. I can't imagine what it's like to try to, you know, combat the, International
right.
Boxing Association and their decision making.
Yeah, no, I imagine. I think it, just long story short is that the sport is still evolving, kind of right before our eyes, and there's obviously always room for improvement. You know, I mean, even though you've documented that the sport is almost, you know, probably one of the ancient sports, but it still has in kind of in modern time is as in, you know, as in being organized sport, it's still rather new, and we're still trying to get all the nuances, since it is hand-to-hand combat to a certain extent. We're trying to organize it as more of just a as kind of like a more common sport is still being trying to be figured out. So I think we're kind of seeing that now, you know, obviously, and it's now that's more of a popular sport. I think a lot of people, you know, like to put their input and their two cents into what should be done to make it better, quote unquote.
Right. Yeah. And again, I think what's so interesting is that, you know, if you look at the difference between like what we could say is like a bad decision in the UFC versus a bad decision in boxing, is that with the UFC, it's usually blamed on inept judges.
Right.
Whereas in boxing, it's blamed on corrupt judges.
Yeah, that's
and I think that's because boxing has this history of corruption, and MMA is, in the modern sense, still relatively new and doesn't have that same history of corruption.
Right. No, I agree. And if anybody's interested in learning about the history of MMA, they should check out your book, She's a Knockout, A History of Women in Combat Sports, Fighting Sports.
Fighting Sports.
Boom, Fighting Sports. Yes, and of course, the podcast, the warm-up podcast, correct?
Yes, yes. I'm really excited about it, and I can't wait to share some more stories. So thanks for letting me bore y'all with my random history tidbits today.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and if you guys are in Denver anytime, please check out Mike and LA's gym, Train, Fight, Win. We will make sure we put all the contact information on the show notes for this week's podcast. And if you do come, make sure you tell them that you heard about it on the Addicted to Fitness podcast.
Yeah.
All right, LA, thanks again for joining me, and it was great to talk to you as always.
Oh, thanks, Nick. I appreciate it.
All right, guys, we hope you enjoyed the interview with Dr. L.A. Jennings. She is a wealth of knowledge, and I'm super excited that she now started her own podcast.
I know. Yeah. That is so freaking cool. And yeah. The fact that, I mean, she's one of those people, I feel like, just listening to her talk and, like, this depth and breadth of information that she has in her brain, it's just astounding. So yeah. I know that her podcast is going to be awesome because she's going to be able to share all that.
Right. And I listened to a couple episodes. I'm a little bit behind, so I got to catch up. But it's really almost like a narrative, like a history kind of lesson in narrative form. She provides quotes and different statistics and all this like historical facts, but presents it in a very entertaining fashion. So I highly recommend The Warm Up. That's the podcast name, The Warm Up. So with Dr. L.A. Jennings, and I know L.A. and I, we're very casual. So since you know, we have such a great relationship, and I forgot to allow her to mention some of the her contact info at the end of the interview. So I wanted to make sure I did that for you guys. Now her on Twitter, you can follow L.A. at Dr. L.A. Jennings. It is Dr._LA_Jennings. So check her out there. And like we said, The Warm Up Podcast, you can find that in iTunes. I think it's just The Warm Up. So it's not The Warm Up Podcast like us, Addicted Fitness Podcast. So
yeah, and all of the links and all this information will be in the show notes. And we'll also put it on the Facebook page.
Oh, yes, that's true.
So that you guys can quickly access that in case you need it.
Yes, that's right. Don't forget to like and follow our Facebook page, guys. So one more thing, that gym, I'm not lying to you guys. If you visit Denver, please, please, please check out Train, Fight, Win. Tell them that Nick and Shannon from the Addicted to Fitness Podcast sent you. And if you want to have if you want to learn any more information about the gym, you can go to their website, which is tfwmma.com, and their phone number, contact number is 850-322-5813. All right,
it's fun. It's worth just a drop in too. Like yes. Even if you're not a serious, you know, you're not someone that's seriously training, you just want a good workout, just drop in there for a good workout because You're gonna have fun. You're gonna meet some great people, and you get exactly what you want.
Exactly. Yeah. It's honestly, the atmosphere is the most appealing thing. I mean, obviously, Mike in LA and all the trainers there are very skilled, and they provide great instruction and will create an awesome workout or training program for you. But honestly, the atmosphere is what, you know, it's what makes me miss living in Denver. That's I've told you, I believe that. The only reason I would have stayed in Denver would be because of the gym. So, we can't wait to get back there and see those guys again.
Yep.
All right. I think that's all we got for them this week.
That's it.
All right. This has been another edition of the Addicted to Fitness Podcast, and we'll check you next time.
Bye.
If you want to learn more about Elemental Training Tampa, check us out on Facebook or go to our website, elementaltampa.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter under the handle ETTampa. Please rate and review the podcast. Your feedback will help us get better. Thanks. Thank you for stopping by and checking out this week's Addicted to Fitness podcast?
Podcast.
Wow.
Podcast.
All right. There's the outtake. 5, 4, 3...